ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Lobstermen in Maine dealing with something they don't often experience, a severe storm, the remnants of Hurricane Lee.
It's very rare. Very rare. This is probably the closest one that I know of. Hopefully it's pushing farther to the east.
It's Bruce Young in Bar Harbor. The impact of the storm expected to be felt across an area more than 400 miles wide. First impact of the UAW strike comes as Ford announced it's laying off 600 workers. The so-called precision strike impacted Ford, GM, and Stellantis factories. Special counsel Jack Smith asked a federal judge to impose a narrow gag order on former President Trump, prohibiting him from making public comments about the January 6th case. And the Justice Department said Oviedo Guzman Lopez, the son of Mexican drug lord known as El Chapo, has been extradited to the U.S. to face drug trafficking charges. This is ABC News. Deliberations are set to continue today in the Texas State Senate, where members are debating whether to convict and remove the state's attorney general.
Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton faces 16 articles of impeachment that stem from allegations of corruption and bribery. The state Senate, made up mostly of Republicans, met for about 8 hours on Friday, but weren't ready to vote on whether to convict Paxton, whose 3 terms in office have been marred by scandal and criminal charges. The state House, which is also Republican-controlled, voted to impeach Paxton in May. If a verdict isn't announced by Sunday night, the senators might be sequestered in the Capitol until they reach one. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
It's been nearly a week since MGM Properties was hit by a massive cyber attack. The company's been tight-lipped about the issue. Guests have reported slot machines being offline, along with hotel door keys not working. MGM has not said if it paid a ransom, but it has notified the SEC. The FBI also involved in the investigation. Brian Clark, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
Mino and the Mayor.
What do you think of this team, Brady, with the new quarterback?
It's such a wild card because you go all the way back to Aaron Rodgers. What's been cool about my football experience is I've seen this. Aaron was a good player. Nobody ever expected him to become a first ballot Hall of Famer, especially under the circumstances of having to replace a Hall of Famer, which is rare.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. Tommy Thompson, John McCain, I would put Tony Evers in this category. They're guys who are running because there were things that they wanted to do.
The Todd Alba Show.
Now contrast that to Hillary Clinton, I would argue, or Donald Trump. Sure, there are things they want to do, but ultimately, they are like Scott Walker. They were people who want to be.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us. Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
And Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated. Educators talking education.
Oh, it is Tim and Johnny. We are back. Busted pencils. Fully leaded education talk. As they say, educated educators talking education. Johnny, going back to the roots, just, you know, a quick little history lesson. Busted pencils in 2014 is when it first got launched as a podcast. And at that time, I had a great friend because I was in Wisconsin, Ruth Conniff. She was at the Progressive at the time. Did a whole story on Busted Pencils, Matt Damon's mom, Martin Atkins was all over that. I still have all of those things. We are going back to Wisconsin tonight, though, where the roots of the show Busted Pencils were. We have that person, Ruth Conniff. Awesome. She is the executive editor of the Wisconsin Examiner now. How anti-government ideologues targeted Wisconsin public schools. Ruth, so good to see you. Do you remember that in 2014?
Certainly do.
Okay.
I remember being with you and Ed Schultz at Fighting Bob Fest.
There we go. See, I said Johnny, I said, Ruth was kind of, you know, with Ed. You did a lot of quite a few appearances with Ed during that time. Yeah. That was Fighting Bob Fest. And then we were at least one, not two, Network for Public Education conferences. So we were thinking about this. I saw this piece. You know, we've had Dr. Diane Ravitch on the show before. She's always kind of that person out there who's got the pulse on everything public education, Diane Ravitch's blog. And boom, there it is last week. Ruth Conniff being Diane doing what Diane does, saying like, here's some of the best stuff out there, Wisconsin. I was like, wait, I got to get Ruth. We got to get back on the show. I bet she doesn't even know that I'm in Ohio at this point. And you didn't.
I didn't know.
Well, I know it's hard to believe that I left Wisconsin, but I did. And I'm in Ohio now. Ruth, though, we talk about Wisconsin, your piece here, we're going to get into it, but you think about this. John and I were talking about this. I said, you know, one of the things about Wisconsin when it comes to public education, it's like, if it's happening in public education and if it's happening in Wisconsin, chances are it's happening everywhere. And so, you know, we're really going back into this too. And I know this piece is largely on vouchers. For anybody who's out there who's just listening for the first time and going, wait a minute, Wisconsin, what's about? Ruth, Milwaukee, the very first voucher city, correct? Give us a history lesson.
Yeah, well, in 1990, Milwaukee launched this experiment of school vouchers. And the idea was that it was supposed to help kids in poor school districts with crumbling schools get a ticket out and go to, you know, a mainline Catholic or Lutheran school, get, you know, a better education. And African-American parents were really pushed forward, although the right-wing Bradley Foundation, which is a major national right-wing foundation, has always been a big voucher backer. They pushed forward individual parents and families to promote the idea that, hey, kids don't have time. They deserve to get out of these bad schools and into good schools. And people really, in a bipartisan way, supported it. Polly Williams, who's now deceased, who was a Democratic legislator at the time, backed it. She proposed the legislation. Governor Tommy Thompson, a Republican, was a huge proponent. And 350 kids were in that program. Mm. Now there are 52,000 voucher students in Wisconsin. They've expanded the program year after year, although they've never demonstrated that these kids get better results academically from going to these schools. And as the expansion began, one of the most important things to understand about it is when they first took the program statewide, 3/4 of participants were families that had never gone to public school. So we were not talking about this handful of kids who were having a rough time in school, who deserved a quick exit to a better academic situation. We're talking about 52,000 Wisconsin students who are part of a parallel school system in which we're giving public money to private schools without the kind of oversight the public schools have. No school board oversight, very little in the way of requirements in terms of their curriculum. Many of them very seriously harsh religious schools. Mm-hmm. There was an ACLU lawsuit that was unsuccessful at the state Supreme Court level. Interesting side note, Ken Starr was the attorney who defended the religious schools in that, showing the sort of national right-wing network, which we've talked about many times, Tim, but the sort of the political effort to dismantle public education, which in individual cases, on the face of it, seems like, oh, give kids a little flexibility, give this one kid a chance. This is part of a coordinated strategy nationwide that's been unrolling, that started here in Wisconsin, to say public education has failed. And fundamentally, I think, is connected to the idea that democracy has failed. Don't need these democratic institutions anymore.
I know Johnny's like, she went right there to my sweet spot, democracy, because that's what we're always talking about. But Ruth, I mean, you covered a lot there in just that piece, and it hit so many things. But, let's start, though, right there. The idea of school choice located within that framing very early on, as you just said, poor, failing public schools, inner city Milwaukee. These kids need a chance. These families need an opportunity to send their kids somewhere else. I mean, that was the framing from the very beginning. These poor kids need a better opportunity. Let's give them a, quote, choice. And right, that was the whole start of it. This idea, you said, and if the right wing hasn't done anything necessarily, well, they haven't done anything good for public education. They have been the awesome people at framing these conversations so that when you come out against them, you're automatically put up against the wall as going, what, Tim, you don't want poor minority students to have an opportunity to have a really great, successful public school like your kids get? Like, no, that's not what I'm saying. But they frame it that way. But then you fast forward, that's, 1990, right? You said 19. Yeah. Here we are now, 300 some students to 50 some thousand students. But in the middle there has been opportunities to say, is it working? Right. And let's start right there. Was there ever a time since 1990 when we had any access to any, quote, apples to apples comparable data that showed public school choice students were doing better than public school students?
No, the data shows that they're not doing that well. I mean, it's not as bad in Wisconsin as it is in Florida and some other states where you really see the rise of these fly-by-night cheap education academies in strip malls that are trying to make a buck. And, that's always a bad sign in education because it costs money to have sufficiently educated teachers who are in front of kids and small enough classrooms to really do right by kids. So in Wisconsin, we have pretty much no difference on test scores after 30 years of the voucher experiment. It's basically done nothing. But in other school districts around the country that have replicated the Wisconsin model, where there's even less stability than there is in Wisconsin in terms of, the privates that are some of the private Catholic and Lutheran schools that have been around for a while that are sort of reputable, normal schools, balance out these fly-by-night academies that have cropped up just to take the tax dollars. In other states, that's not the case. And the learning loss has been astounding, actually.
That way, Johnny, say if you caught that in that piece. Oh, and the number's 844-967-2789. We are talking to Ruth Conniff, the executive editor of the Wisconsin Examiner, how anti-government ideologues targeted Wisconsin public schools. That point, though, learning loss, the fact that you turned learning loss back on the voucher schools as they're the ones causing learning loss. First of all, thank you. That was awesome, because Johnny and I have been spending, you know, since the pandemic trying to explain the fallacy of learning loss. The way you pointed out, though, is like, hey, guess what? Actually, in a lot of these voucher schools, kids have gone backwards.
Yeah, they've real gone learning dramatically. They about double the amount of loss from just having to stay home during the pandemic. So a very big loss. And there you see them, you know, I took a tour of voucher schools back when you were in Wisconsin. And at the time there had been a lot of news about these really cruddy little academies that popped up and then closed in the middle of the night and took the money with them when they fled town in Milwaukee. So I saw schools that were located in former gas stations and in office buildings where they were teaching creationism in science class. I mean, this kind of deprofessionalization and, you know, privatization of education means that there's some really weird stuff out there that's being funded as if it were public education.
Johnny, you're like, whoa, go, man.
Well, you know, Tim, we've talked about this over and over on the show, and I'm grateful for our guest tonight. Ruth, thank you for the work that you do and for being a conduit for explaining this. Because I think it is something, and Tim, you highlighted this, it is something that gets purported as this solution. Like, how do we make schools better? And the immediate move politically is to open it up to the free market. And this idea that, like, you know, if we create competition, things will get better, right? And if we create an industry in education, things will improve because there'll be this competition to be the best school or to be a good school to retain students. And on one level, you know, this is really important to ask ourselves as a nation. Is this what we want? Do we want children lost in the mix, that kind of learning loss? Well, we see what schools make it in the free market. One, I don't think any educator, parent, or member of the community out there wants, you know, to roll the dice on that. Let's just see if this school experiment works and try it out. That's not just or fair for any kid anywhere. The other thing is, we know that by and large, it doesn't really work, and it undermines public education, which we keep saying over and over again is a matter of national security. It is of utmost importance to democracy that public education exists in a strong way, right? And so what the voucher movement has done, as well as charterization of these of districts around our country, is really undermined the strength of public education, which is really dangerous. And why? Really, by and large, to create markets and educational opportunity at the expense of young people, which is ultimately the expense of all of our future. So it's really good. I also want to highlight, thank you, Ruth, for doing the work where you're at, because it is in many ways more than just historically ground zero. But we think about what we learn as a nation from what's happened and happening in Wisconsin and Michigan and Illinois, and then in places like Florida and New Orleans and districts that are almost predominantly charter now.
And we're going to get that. It's the numbers 844-967-2789. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Ruth, when we get back, we'll get to Johnny's question. Busted Pencils back after the break.
Do you ever get tired of one-sided conversations? Have you changed the station due to mean-spirited rhetoric? Wouldn't it be refreshing to listen and engage in civilized dialogue about politics and how issues affect our families differently? Welcome to the Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Elfheim.
And I'm Emily Sefos. Together, we'll look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. So join us on Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Barron.
Today, I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend, Truman McGee.
From an environmentally friendly perspective, yeah, the fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I am a cereal strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
That's what we do here on Busted Pencils. We grow flowers. Educated educators talking education. Our guest, Ruth Conniff, executive editor, Wisconsin Examiner, how anti-government ideologues targeted Wisconsin public schools. Had a great summary of the choice movement that started in 90 in Milwaukee, spreading through Wisconsin, spreading all through America. We're going to touch more on the attack on democracy. However, Tom, L.A. Tom, giving us a call. L.A. Tom, what's shaking, man?
Hey, guys, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. And all people must realize that the power lies within us.
Nice.
That we're that powerful, we all come together collectively. Second, so great to hear Ruth's voice. I haven't heard it in a couple of years, and so good to hear her voice because it's always her voice is needed.
Yes, it was.
In a major way. I also want to say, I don't know if you guys already touched upon this, and if you had, I apologize, but we really, in schools everywhere, need to teach people the difference between private and public. I did not know this, and it seems like a very simple concept, until I was probably around 20 years old. And I found out about it through Randy Rhodes and through Tom Hartman. And I'm telling you, privatize means profitize.
Yes.
Public means nonprofit. It means it's in the good of the people. It's all the money that we put into our tax dollars that is spent for public good, not for profit. And when you have any organization that calls themselves a private organization, they are having a profit motive involved in it. And we really need to keep asking people. I asked someone this weekend, or this couple weekends ago, in Florida. And the woman was 45 or maybe even 50 years old. And I said, well, do you know the difference between private and public? And she did not. And it's a pretty simple concept. But the thing is, the Republicans want to privatize everything. And people are voting against their best interest because for some reason they have sold us a bill of goods that privatizing and profitizing is the way, you know, of the world. And it's not. It's about us all putting in little bits of money so we can all do better, which when we're all doing better is when the country and the world is doing better.
L.A. Tom, Ruth, respond to L.A. Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is what is at stake, that the public school system has oversight by elected school board members who we the voters elect. And there's a feeling of a joint venture. It's free. It's required by law to take everybody. None of those things are true of the privatized school in the Wisconsin School Choice Program. Either voucher schools, which are private schools that get a certain amount of money, the same amount that they calculate would be spent per student in the public school system. That money leaves the public school and goes to a private school. The private school educates the kid. Private school doesn't have to keep the kid. They can expel kids for all kinds of reasons. In Wisconsin, they're expelling a lot of LGBTQ kids right now. And they justify it because of their religious ideology, and their ability to do that has been upheld. They expel disabled kids because they're more expensive to educate. And those kids, that money, if they're expelled or counseled out, you know, just suggested to leave after the first Friday count, when they count heads, all that money stays with the private school. The kid goes back to the public schools, which absolutely are, their mission is to take everybody. They take them without the money that,
right,
you know, that they are paid to educate them. So those are some really important differences between public and private education. And also there's just this kind of gut level argument that the right is making, which is that everybody has waited in line at the DMV. You know, everybody has had the experience of dealing with the government and feeling frustrated and annoyed by bureaucracy. And, you know, people have had teachers that were boring and they were bored in class. And so they're arguing that let's take this quick fix and let's, as private citizens, do something so much better and so much more energetic. Well, you know, it turns out it's not better. It turns out it's a really hard job that requires a lot of support to educate kids. And it's better to invest in the system that we have than try to reinvent the wheel with these individual separate private efforts.
But even that now, too, I think we've shifted since 1990, really too, since 2016, and really hardcore here after COVID going through. Ruth, it's not about even better schools now. We actually, when you talk about the LGBTQ students being moved out there, I mean, that is almost, it's like that's what they're arguing for and saying, this is why we want choice, because we have every right to hold on to a discriminatory, racist, classist, bigoted approach, because we're the parents and that's what we want. And you've got people saying, and give them public money so that they can actually put their kids in schools that, whether it, they bigoted against LGBTQ, teach creationism, people are now arguing and saying, that's exactly what we're saying, Tim. Like, they're not even hiding the fact that they're saying, we want your public dollars to defund public schools because we don't like public schools that talk about teaching for democracy and all of us hanging together. I know we're coming up on about the last minute, Ruth. Ben, Tom, thanks for the call. LA told me, always appreciate it. Ruth, I'm not too far out there, am I?
No, you're not at all. I mean, this is the, you know, I mentioned this in this piece that you mentioned, the Moms for Liberty Wall Street Journal opinion piece, where they say we don't co-parent with the government. And their issue is they don't want their kids going to school with gay kids. Mm-hmm. And that has become, you know, that culture war stuff has really moved into the forefront for the right. And it's a smokescreen, because what they really want to do is dismantle everything public, including
absolutely. Absolutely. Number is 844-967-2789. Our guest, Ruth Conniff, executive editor, Wisconsin Examiner, How Anti-Government Ideologues Targeted Wisconsin Public Schools. Kind of moving into this now. I'm going to come back, though, and I'm going to ask a little question about your Democratic governor, Ruth, because, you know, he's always worth asking a question about. It's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. It's Educated Educators Talking Education. More with Ruth Conniff when we get back.
Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Lobstermen in Maine dealing with something they don't often experience, a severe storm, the remnants of Hurricane Lee.
It's very rare. Very rare. This is probably the closest one that I know of. And hopefully it's pushing farther to the east.
That's Bruce Young in Bar Harbor. The impact of the storm expected to be felt across an area more than 400 miles wide. First impact of the UAW strike comes as Ford announced it's laying off 600 workers. The so-called precision strike impacted Ford, GM, and Stellantis factories. Special counsel Jack Smith asked a federal judge to impose a narrow gag order on former President Trump, prohibiting him from making public comments about the January 6th case. And the Justice Department said Oviedo Guzman Lopez, the son of Mexican drug lord known as El Chapo, has been extradited to the U.S. to face drug trafficking charges. This is ABC News.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Mino and the Mayor.
We're talking with Tony Mandrich. You're talking about your alcohol problems. Jim kind of mentioned here during the break. He said, yeah, the coaches didn't do anything about it. And I said, didn't do anything about it. They were with the guys.
I mean, nobody forced anybody to drink. Drinking was just part of it. And it was kind of like that stereotype of, you know, being a guy or being an athlete. Or it was just part of that.
Mino and the Mayor. Weekday mornings from 6 until 8. On the talk of Green Bay, WGBW and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. And on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Yeah. Todd Albo would normally be sharing his dulcet tones with us, but you'll recall that last week, Todd was having issues with the cable company, with an internet connection. I'm now thinking, Todd Albo, did you break Spectrum? Are you responsible for this ESPN mess?
I seem to broke everything else, so it wouldn't surprise me, no.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings 6 till 8, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We're busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Ruth Conniff, executive editor, Wisconsin Examiner, how anti-government ideologues targeted Wisconsin public schools all the way 1990, the first school choice movement. It's not produced anything better. They don't even care about better anymore now because it's fully gone into the culture wars. I do want to call attention, Ruth, to a piece part in here, though, to the latest, that expansion of vouchers, though, in Wisconsin. It happened because of the Democratic governor in Wisconsin said yes, right?
Well,
okay.
Expansion. So there's an expansion coming up because enrollment caps are coming off in a couple of years, and then everybody can get a voucher, but the increase in per pupil payments negotiated by Democratic Governor Tony Evers with the Republican legislative leaders, that was a blow to Evers supporters who are public education advocates. And he has a lot of those supporters because he was the state superintendent of public instruction for a long time. And he used to attend this annual conference of public education advocates every single year, like clockwork. He was the keynote speaker. This year, he didn't go. And he didn't go, I think, because it was just too painful. People were really, really mad at him. There was a budget negotiation in Wisconsin. The Republican legislative leaders basically held the city of Milwaukee hostage. They weren't going to release shared revenue that the city needed to avoid total financial catastrophe unless certain conditions were met. And the biggest of those was this big increase in dollars to choice schools from, you know, public funds. So Evers swallowed that. And his argument is he couldn't let the city of Milwaukee go bankrupt. And public education advocates just felt like this is a disaster for public schools. We're sitting on a $6 billion surplus in Wisconsin. We are in the chips. We have money. We can afford to fund public education. And instead of doing that, we have yet another budget cycle. The last one, there was literally a zero increase for public schools. And this year is not much better. 40% of schools are going to see less money in the next 2 years than they had in the previous 2 years under the zero increase budget. So schools are strapped. They're cutting programs. Schools are shutting down. And now we're expanding money to this private voucher school system. And then in 2026, all the caps are going to come off. So we're draining resources. You know, we're funding two parallel systems. We are not giving sufficient money to fund one. And it's really, you know, it's existential.
So what's a public school advocate to do? And what in Wisconsin, in Florida, in Texas, in Ohio? I mean, it's like you lay this out and you say, you know, Wisconsin and Governor Evers isn't the only Democrat who's done this. I mean, No Child Left Behind, again, as you point out from the very beginning, vouchers, No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top has always been a bipartisan, you know, agreement to continue inflicting pain on America's public schools. And it's just that. Being more, you know, they're like, why aren't you criticizing the right? It's like, well, you haven't listened to Johnny and I. We're always making sure that the right gets criticized. But it's like, you know what? It's when people who are supposed to be advocates who end up taking this on, we said this single issue of public schools. People are like, you have a radio show about public schools? Really? Like, what is there to talk about? It's like, we're talking about the bedrock of American democracy here. That's what we're talking about. That's the passion that we're saying here. And so, you know, you're saying schools are cutting programs. That means that students are getting less experience. That means students are not getting the education they deserve. That means that public schools are not putting out citizens that are ready to deal with and live in a democracy. People are like, that seems way out of line to me. I'm like, no, this is what's at stake. So when you hear people get mad at Democrats who, quote, backstab, it's because we're like, wait a minute. If you're not going to defend democracy, this isn't about public schools at this point. You are literally selling out democracy. And I'm sorry, Democrats, you're not supposed to sell out democracy.
Well, I think it is. These things are tied together. I think kind of the MAGA attack on elections, on sort of the idea of democratic institutions that we can have faith in. Here in Wisconsin, the attack on the Supreme Court and the justice who was just elected by a big fat majority that they're trying to impeach before she even has a chance to do anything as a Supreme Court justice.
Right.
All of that is tied together. And I think it's an undermining of the will of the majority and the power of the majority of people to come together in a democracy and vote for what they want, because what they want is not what the right-wing ideologues who are behind this privatization movement want. And so attacking public education, attacking elections, it's all part of this sort of drive for minority rule and not allowing us to have a more equal, more fair society.
Well, and that's like Johnny, we have to talk about this, Johnny, right? It's like, of course, go after public schools, because if you want to cut democracy, you cut public schools. I know that's Johnny's always talking about it, dude.
I mean, and it's also just according to like the origins of this, an untapped market, right? They really can align this with beginning to open markets to, you know, a larger consumer base in children, and then marketizing those young people as profitable entities. Which, you know, historical to that, you had privates private schools and public schools. And you kind of had, you know, a real clear divide between how those were funded and how those worked. And this whole movement really blurred that in effort to really, like we said earlier, really create larger market opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, it's a big budget item in every state, public education. So it's a whole bunch of money. And so private interests have seen an opportunity to get their hands on that money.
Yeah, we can do it better for less. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's like an oversimplification of it. But what we've seen is that that has made it, in most cases, really awful for students and families, and also pretty hard on the teaching profession.
Oh, we haven't. Yeah, we haven't even gotten to that. The whole idea. I mean, you think about, okay, why do we have a teacher shortage? And Ruth knows this. When I was in Wisconsin, that was the big bang. The drama was banging all the time. It's like, well, gee, I wonder why. You know, when you continue to undermine the work that they do, and you're really looking at this and going, I don't understand why we have a teaching shortage. Ruth, though, you know, what about, though, for people to understand, you know, we're talking about Madison, Milwaukee, Waukesha, you know, people are like, hey, that's not reality. Understand that Wisconsin is a rural state.
Yeah.
And you know, you go up to what's happening, like the rural schools up there, they're losing money to private schools, to private school choice. And they, a lot of those places right up in the Northwoods in Wisconsin, they don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's a big moment of crisis for rural schools that are already kind of on the razor's edge because of declining enrollment. And they're looking at potentially closing down schools that are the heart of their community. And it's brutal to drain money out of those schools to fund, you know, schools in far distant places in the state that are private schools. And especially when you figure in the fact that so many of the families who attend those schools never went to public school at all. So why are we just doing a straight up subsidy to private school families' tuition payments?
I mean, you put that together, right? It's like, yeah, we look at the bulk of the people receiving public money to go to private schools were already in private schools. So these aren't people who are making a choice. But then, you know, I'd say, that, you know, what we've always tried to do on the show, Busted Pencils, is to get our neighbors who are maybe listening, my neighbor, to go, but wait, I didn't understand that way. So you're saying that rural public schools that don't have choice, their money is going to families who are already in private schools. And you know, I talk about this and it's like, yeah. And so you're going to bring it up, your Friday night football in rural, you know, here, Southeast Ohio, rural Northwoods, Wisconsin, your Friday night football, when it goes away because of funding, that funding went to parents who were already paying to send their kids to private schools that are now using your tax dollars to subsidize their private schools.
Yeah.
Like, can we say that any clearer? Is there any sense of saying, I hear you, it makes sense to me, I'm going to change my mind? Or are we just so pitted at this point that, as L.A. Tom was saying, we vote against our own interests because we have to?
I mean, I think you do see examples of those divisive politics and dividing people against each other. So they're not on the same sides. They don't defend things like the public schools that we all hold in common. You see some headway on that. For example, the Wisconsin Public Education Network has really brought together a rural and urban schools alliance, where you have people really seeing that they're in the same boat. And it's not about urban versus rural and those, you know, Republican versus Democratic kind of silos. It's really about recognizing the value of public education and the way in which these districts have similar problems, similar, you know, expending a huge amount of money on special ed, which is federally mandated. They have to spend money on it, so they have to cut other programs to continue to fund that adequately, and begging the state to up its portion of the reimbursement for special ed so that they can have a healthier budget. That's a shared problem between rural and urban districts. You know, all of those kind of budget problems that they're having. And one of the big ones is just the threat of private school choice draining all the resources out of the public school system.
Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, I just keep getting into this and all the different roads we could go down with it, because, you know, I think, you know, the message being, you know, all of this is really important to the larger landscape of education, because the kind of experience that school leaders and communities have in places like Wisconsin, you know, and I'll throw Michigan and some other places in there, where they've really seen what the charter school and voucher movement has done to not only public education, but I'm just going to broaden it to educational quality writ large. There's these myths that, you know, these were attacks on private schools. Like if you're against charter, you're against private schools. And these are really by and large myths, right? It's that we are advocates for strong education writ large, and especially the important foundation of a public school system. And that to take away from that is really damaging, not only to this larger concept of democracy, but to local economies, you know, to the strength of overall our states and nation. So it's been really important. It's gotten confusing, mm-hmm. because it's also not as simple as it's either just a charter or a public school. You know, LA Tom called and brought this up about the importance between understanding the difference between public and private. I think that's really important, because that's also something that the privatization, I'm going to separate that from private schools. They already existed as different than public schools. But the privatization of public education, you know, needed something to respond to the way, you know, charters like Ruth brought up, like in, you know, like schools that were not providing a quality education and were not in buildings that would be approved by any of our districts and any of our, you know, communities around the country, were operating as schools. And so there's this movement then to think about, well, what's the difference between, you know, a for-profit charter and a nonprofit charter or a public charter? And so there are different versions of the charter that are all undergirded by.
It sounds to me like we got to have Ruth Conniff back on the show. I say, Ruth, we're coming. Ruth, so what's next for the Wisconsin Examiner? Are we still, you're going to continue to put that spotlight on Wisconsin public schools?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are going to continue to cover what's happening in Wisconsin public schools. And, you know, right now we're covering all this craziness about impeaching the Supreme Court justice who was elected by a big majority, created this new liberal majority. The Republicans can't stand it. They're trying to get rid of her. They've suddenly proposed a new way to do a map here. So that's interesting. So we have
I just saw that. Yeah. Oh my God. That's a whole other story. So WisconsinExaminer.com is where people can go and check this out. We say, you know, when it comes to, you know, Ruth, you really gave the listener, again, all of the loyal listeners in Wisconsin, and then the listeners out there that are across the country have been listening to the show. If it's happening in Wisconsin like this, it's probably happening in your state, in your town too. So, Ruth Conniff, thank you so much for busting pencils.
Yeah, great to be here.
All right. When we get back, Johnny and Tim will break it down. Busted pencils, more when we get back. I wonder if there is. I know you're out there slam dancing, busted pencils. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Thank you, Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner, our anti-government ideologues targeted Wisconsin public schools, history lesson in school choice, 1990, Milwaukee, 300 some students. Johnny Ruth points out now 2023, what 50 some thousand students now are going to get state or are going to get your neighbor, my money to send their kids to private schools. Of those 50 some thousand, you know, well over 60% of those kids were already in private schools. So the whole idea of getting disadvantaged kids out of failing schools, sorry, that's all gone. This is now just going, give me more money to keep my kids in the private school because I want my kids in private schools because I don't want my kids in public schools because, you know, we don't like gay students. We don't like LGBT. We don't like trans. Those special education students just take way too much time away. Or, oh my God, forbid this though too. Johnny, I do not want my kids learning about the fact that, learning about the myth that dinosaurs existed before humans and that they didn't coexist, because that's mythology. And you need to give me government money so that I can have my kids indoctrinated into the reality of dinosaurs and people hanging out together. Huh. Well, yeah, you're laughing, man. Come on.
I mean, because to me, I mean, those are part of the issue. And I think by and large, it is a growing number of people who are exercising that voice. But I don't believe, and maybe this is my own sort of optimism, I don't believe it's the majority. I think the majority is in the smokescreen of the sort of slogan or the marketing campaign around let's provide better educational options for members of the community, in particular members of the community who are underserved, and for everybody, right? So, you know, I've seen this shift over the years and experienced it as a teacher. You know, the rise of STEM, right? Not to say that I'm against science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, but this idea that, you know, that STEM academies or STEM charters, mm-hmm. schools would specialize in providing, you know, more attention to or a deeper attention to, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or better prepare young people for STEM careers. You know, these kinds of discourses, you know, took hold and charters start popping up everywhere promising, you know, robotics curriculum, mm-hmm. you know, a laptop for every child, and sort of created this, you know, sort of Black Friday mayhem around, right. like scurry and scatter to these educational opportunities. It was so predatory on families, because there is, in my opinion, I've yet to work in any community, and I've worked in a lot of different types of communities as an educator. I've yet to work in one where families aren't moving towards the best educational opportunities for their children. And so it was predatory in that sense of it said, hey, let's pitch this as an educational opportunity without really knowing that we can promise it.
Mm-hmm.
And public schools are saying, wait, because forever public schools were a mainstay. This was their obligation. And right. whether they were doing it well or not, we needed to work on getting schools improved towards all of our public schools being, you know, buildings that were up to code with highly right. qualified teachers that were providing the kind of education that this sort of purported quick fix mm-hmm. would provide. And, you know, what we saw was, you know, through legislation, through opening up, you know, school choice, and through ballot measures around vouchers, which would, you know, provide, you know, funding for school, for children to be able to attend non-public schools, created this, you know, this, like, I only way I can compare it is to like a Black Friday sale.
No, I think that, you know, you talk about that. And then the other part of the Black Friday, I know Ruth hit on this, is recognizing that a lot of those students too were you know, we took them at the private school very quickly. And then once that money was in our pockets, then we had no problem then dismissing the ones who we didn't actually like keeping there, of which then Ruth points out, they go back to the public schools. The public schools now then do not have that per pupil funding, because the per pupil funding stays at the private school, the charter school, like that. I see producer Anya kind of getting in there. Anya, what do you got?
Hey, it's me, the youth report. I'm reflecting on when charters came to my hometown of Wausau, and I was so jealous. I had a dear friend named Jess who was able to go to our STEM charter, and I was so jealous of her because they were offering Mandarin and hands-on robotics and 3D printing and things that I really cared about. And I actually ran into Jess. We lost contact when she switched to that school, but we ended up in the same my first college class, we were in the same class together. I was like, oh my gosh, how are you? And eventually we talk about this charter, and she tells me that absolutely nothing that I was excited for was ever actually implemented at that school. They went to our community saying, like, we'll have Mandarin and we'll have these things, and never got it off the ground. So the idea that I would have wasted like my four high school years chasing a promise that wasn't even being fulfilled, it's just so upsetting to think about, and to think about all the students who did get pulled into it and were not given the things that they were promised. So it's sad.
Well, Johnny, and there's John. There it is, Johnny, right? Anya, the predatory part, right? The false promise. And I mean, there's producer Anya saying like the reality, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that plays a big role in it, as well as I'll speak to it as a teacher. I mean, when you get low enrollment in a public school, eventually that school is closed and often reopened as a charter. And so, you know, it's also predatory on educators who are committed to their community, because, you know, speaking from my personal experience and that of my peers in the Progressive Educators Network in Detroit, it was really a matter of, okay, we will continue to work with the children that we've committed often years to. We think about, you know, some, like if you're in a, you know, K-5 or a K-8 school, you're talking about years of committed development into young people. And that's common for teachers. But what it did is it put us in this position where we now get to stay in the same building, work with the same kids, but oftentimes make less pay, have less benefits and less resources. And, you know, and it, so it was predatory on school communities. So there's a lot of dimensions to this, Tim.
We should... a lot. Oh, busted pencils, fully leaded. See you next week.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils, or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
I tried to.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
ABC News, I'm Brian.